The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a bank holiday Monday. Keane and Conan are here as usual. I was in Salt Hill, lads, at the weekend, and as probably the biggest story coming out of the weekend came from Salt Hill, and that is that Monaghan are in an All-Ireland semi-final. They streamed out onto the pitch like they were in an All-Ireland final, like they've won the All-Ireland. It was nice to see. They outnumbered Galway, I would say, could have been 3-1. I was on the terrace looking across at the stand, and when Monaghan would get a score, I think 80% of the stand in Salt Hill was Monaghan. It's absolutely incredible the support they have. And that is the big story coming out of the weekend. Eamon Fitzmaurice probably stepping down as well. But Monaghan, first All-Ireland semi-final. And in my head, the Super 8s were going to make it more difficult on Monaghan because you were thinking maybe they'd win a one-off quarter-final to get into a semi. But they've been the most consistent team, arguably, across the two groups. They should have beaten Kerry at home, dominated them. They beat Kildare, the better team on the day, and they completely dismantled Galway. Like, I mean, it's a sensational kind of Super 8 performance from Monaghan.
Yeah, it's brilliant for the county. They've come so close on a few occasions over the years. I think it was in 2007, was it, with when Banty was over them, they came very close to
Kerry.
Yeah, against Kerry. So, you know, there's still a few survivors from that team, so it's nice for them. They've really kept at it, and they've been supplemented by, look, realistically, a lot of quality players. And when you have enough quality players on the pitch, you tend to get results.
Yeah.
And Monaghan have improved this season, you know, quite significantly, I would have thought, from even from last season, where they were very, very competitive in certain games, but they seemed to just, when it really came to it against the likes of Dublin, they were just that bit short. Now everybody comes up short against Dublin, so it's a bit harsh to be critical of them.
It is, especially in Croke Park.
Yeah, but I just get the impression that I don't think it really matters who Monaghan play now. Even against Dublin, they would still give them their fill of it. Like, I don't think Dublin would walk all over them.
Yeah, well, geez, I don't know. On Croke Park, I think that, like, I mean, it's very hard to make that call. The thing Malachy O'Rourke was saying, right, and this is about the support that they have, because they're not a big county, but it's a real passionate support. And they obviously lost to Fermanagh, and you see in a lot of counties, even Roscommon can't come out and support their team at home in a Super 8 game when they're playing at home to Donegal, just because they got hammered by Tyrone. But Monaghan lost against Fermanagh in a terrible performance, really, really shocking performance by them. And, like, I mean, a lot of counties would just go, ah, forget about that team. They went down to Waterford to play in a qualifier. Malachy O'Rourke said, "We went down to Waterford, and the one thing that gave us a massive boost when we arrived in Waterford at the ground there, there was maybe 4,000 Monaghan supporters down there." Do you know what I mean? On the road to Waterford. Who, like, I mean, you're not, you know you're going to win. Yeah. They're still sticking by them. Like, I mean, it was just, I couldn't believe it. And the noise they made in Salt Hill, and I was on the terrace because the press box was full. I hadn't applied for an accreditation. And I was sitting down waiting for the game to start, and I was just looking in front of me, and there was this fella in front of me, and he'd all tattoos down his legs. It was AC/DC, you know, the guitarist that wears the suit for AC/DC and does the funny dance. So he had a portrait of him on his leg, right? So then I started looking at his other leg, and there was other kind of metal tattoos. And I stood up then, and he had a shaved head, and he had two studs in his neck, right? And he turns around, he's got this kind of schmig beard. I'm like, this fella's not a stereotypical GAA man, and he's wearing a Monaghan jersey.
I was pretty sure you were going to tell me Conor McManus's face tattooed on his leg or something.
But this is the type, everybody in Monaghan basically supports the Monaghan senior football team. That's what I kind of took from it. If this fella does not fit in Pier Stadium, but he's there in a Monaghan jersey, and he had a pair of combat shorts on him, and he was just your stereotypical metalhead.
So he did.
I've never seen a metalhead at a GAA game before.
He didn't have the packed lunch and the cup of tea with him, so he's not the GAA fan.
Yeah,
did he have a rolled up program by any chance?
Listen to me, he'd no rolled up program. He wasn't at the back of his car with sandwiches. He could have been listening to all sorts of music on the way down.
Was he listening to the radio at the game?
No, nothing. No box you would take with this fella.
I remember doing a piece on the, obviously we all talk about the population, 60,000, and I sort of worked out how many of those are between 20 and 20 or 34, and they're all men. So about 5,000 people between the ages of 20 and 34, and you look at the amount of players that they've got out of that, like some of the best players in the country. But yeah, then I was talking about how many of those actually like sport, how many are actually good at sport, how many play GA, and then somebody said to me, yeah, and about 60% of them are rally drivers as well.
They are into the rally driving. Yeah. Darren Hughes made an interesting comment after the game, and he's talking about Malachy O'Rourke, and after Kerry sucker punched him with a late goal, right? So we all saw Malachy O'Rourke after the game, and he's being interviewed, and he's shell-shocked, right? So he's trying to talk about how good a performance it was and things like that, and how he's proud of the players. But he was clearly shell-shocked, and you're like, I mean, it's only human nature. Like, I mean, the whole ground went silent. Like, I mean, they had deserved to win that game. It was taken off them. They hadn't made a semi-final, and then they had to go to Salt Hill. You know what I mean? So it wasn't looking like it had only 2 minutes previously. But Darren Hughes says, Malachy came in. This is Malachy coming into the dressing room after the game. Malachy came in with a big smile on his face and says, that's great. 3 points on the board after two games. We'd have taken that a couple of months ago. Let's go to Galway and win. Like, so Malachy just left that interview where we saw him shell-shocked walking down the corridor to go into his players and go, right, let's just put on, let's fake this, like, I'm livid, let's just put a good front up. And for Darren Hughes to remember Malachy coming in with a smile on his face when Malachy did not want to smile just made me think it's just a good bit of acting by Malachy and good management as well.
Or maybe he's acting to the cameras, like, I mean, you don't know. It's brilliant. Look, that's what you're always looking for from your manager, is to be able to, you know, when there is a down in the group, to be able to flip that on its head.
He's the leader.
And, yeah, he is the leader, and he's the one that has the ability to set the tone for the group and the dynamic, and to basically brainwash his players in the lead up to a game. So if that's from a few months out or if that's from a week out, it's always the next match. So how do you get your players into the right frame of mind for the next game? Which is something that when you look at the contrast between Monaghan and Galway going into the game last weekend, two completely different jobs for the management, for the respective management teams. One management team got theirs completely right and got their team from a position where they would have obviously had a bit of a down, were able to turn that around straight away and get such a magnificent performance from the group of players a week later.
So yeah.
Fantastic from the management setup.
Fantastic management. And just him walking into the dressing room smiling and trying to put that positive spin, it just shows that how much of it's psychological and how a little thing like that, Darren Hughes is remembering it. You know what I mean? The week after. Other big story, obviously, is Eamon Fitzmaurice stepping down as Kerry manager. So, like Eamon said himself, it was kind of a gentleman's agreement of 3 years, but like, I mean, that's reviewed every year. So he's probably done the right thing. It's very, very honest of him to say that. He says, with a new man in charge, it'll hopefully afford him a bit of time and space, a bit of patience within our own county to allow them to develop to their full potential. I did feel over the last few weeks that the fact I've been there for 6 years, maybe I was a bit of a lightning rod for criticism and I was drawing criticism into the group. I didn't like the fact that some of our younger players were going around the county and there was a negative atmosphere. Now, like, I mean, you look at Mickey Hart, for example, and that kind of thing in Tyrone. Now, Tyrone obviously in a semi-final this year, but for the last 3 or 4 years, Mickey Hart, you could argue, has been dragging criticism on his players as well, but he's stuck it out. So it takes a huge man, as far as I'm concerned, like Eamon Fitzmaurice, to say, I'm going to protect some of these younger fellas. Their criticism can be fierce down there, and even though he could have stayed probably for another year, he's taken the decision himself. You don't see that very often.
No, you don't. I think Fitzmaurice has done a fairly good job with Kerry, given the circumstances, in the overall scheme of things. I think that, look, in the last couple of seasons, maybe there's been certain decisions that you could argue for or against some of the decisions that he made as a manager and some of his team selections and some of the tactics. But look, that sort of stuff, I mean, that's what the job entails. So,
yeah.
I mean, like, if Kerry don't win All-Ireland, they're going to be critical. Whether that's fair on the management or the players or not, whether the players are good enough or not, the supporters down there are saying, we're not good enough, we're not winning the All-Ireland. Now, if you're not good enough to win the All-Ireland, I mean, it's hardly criticism to, for someone to say you're not good, you know, you weren't good enough this year to win the All Ireland. Now, where it goes is, I'm sure it's not just related to football though, which is definitely a problem. You know, if stuff gets around outside that, and it does when it builds up in a county where there's this sort of negative energy and momentum behind it.
Yeah,
it's very, very difficult for players to cocoon themselves away from that because they're hearing it everywhere they go. And Kerry is football mad, so. From that point of view, it's probably a good decision from Fitzmaurice, whether even if he is the right man for the job, which is a strange one because I don't know who the next Kerry manager will be.
Well, you see, I don't either. And I thought Fitzmaurice, like, I mean, for all the criticism, a lot of these things are criticism after the game. Like, I mean, you know, you play a sweeper, you don't play a sweeper, you're left wide open, you're wrong. You play a sweeper, if you lose the game, then the sweeper's obviously the wrong decision. And I'd say in Kerry, this is amplified. He says he has a box full of hate mail. Now, like, I mean, that's obviously an older generation. And who do these people think they are? Like, there's no one under the age of 40 sends letters anymore. Like, I mean, they'll tweet you, right? So, like, I mean, there's older people in Kerry that are taking the time to write a letter and send it to Eamon Fitzmaurice. Like, I mean, it's just bizarre to me.
I think they need a bit of a reality check.
Yeah.
Like, it's great that Kerry find themselves in this position over the last 100 years that they think not winning an All-Ireland is a failure. That's amazing. Everybody would love that. But they're not there anymore. The game has changed. Kerry has changed. And Dublin are one of the best teams we've seen. So, like, this stat, like the past balance thrown out, that they've only won one All-Ireland in the last 9 years. Well, Dublin have won 5 of the last 8. Kerry lost to them in a final. They lost to them in a semi-final. Lost to Mayo. Like, they're not that good. They're not where they were. And it's time that they started realising that. Because, yes, Fitzmaurice might have made a few bad choices along the way, but Kerry aren't at that level where you can start crying that they've only won one All-Ireland in this era where Dublin are.
Yeah, exactly. And you're completely right. And, like, I mean, Donegal won another All-Ireland, tactically destroyed Kerry in 2012. Yeah. Kerry played into their hands. Fitzmaurice wasn't there for that. Let me just say about Fitzmaurice, right? So he came in, 2013 was his first year under Kerry. I was looking at the under-21s, right? They'd only won one under-21 in the last 8. One under-21, Munster. Now, I'm not talking about All-Ireland. Munster. Cork had dominated and Tipperary had won one. The year 2011, before Fitzmaurice took over in 2012 for the 2013 season, Kerry under-21s lost to Cork 2-24 to 8 points. Destroyed. Who was on that Kerry team? Brian Kelly, Peter Crowley, Mark Griffin, Jack Sherwood, Jonathan Lyon, James O'Donoghue, Barry John Keane, Stephen O'Brien, Paul Ganey, Dottie Casey. Eamon Fitzmaurice got an All-Ireland out of these lads. Like, this was not a golden generation coming through. He made a silk purse out of a cow's ear and turned James O'Donoghue into a player of the year, turned Paul Geaney into one of the most feared forwards. I heard nothing about Geaney coming up to the ranks. Fitzmaurice has developed these fellas into top players and he had nothing to work with. There was the breakup of a brilliant team that lost to Dublin in 2011. You had Tomás O'Shea, Paul Galvin, all these lads dropping off. So he had to marry these fellas who weren't exactly winners coming up through the underage ranks with a team that was fading and marry these two together, and he won an All-Ireland. He wasn't given the hand that some Kerry managers in the 2000s were, where you just come in, manage these fellas, and you have to beat Tyrone or Armagh. And a lot of the time they didn't, when it came down to it and it mattered, they didn't beat Tyrone or Armagh. And Eamon Fitzmaurice gets criticism down in Kerry for winning All-Ireland with very little. Now he's got a chance to develop a new crop of players, but you're living in cloud cuckoo land if you think we had in Laois unbelievable minors in under-21. Yeah. That you have to be 23, 24, 25 before you start, like, being the backbone of that team. So it's very unfair. I think he's come at a time where I think he's a very good manager, but I think he hasn't had the hand that a lot of Kerry managers have had.
No, I'd agree with that. He did remarkably well to get an All-Ireland out of them because he got the last sort of dregs out of some of their legendary players, you know, and the lads that have been around for an awful long time, you know, Mark O'Shea and Aidan O'Mahony in particular being kind of fairly prominent players on that team. So, like, he's done remarkably well from that respect to even get one All-Ireland out of them. You know, their record at underage level wasn't hectic before he took the job. In the last few years, they've won four minors in a row. They've won what, 3 Hogan Cups from Kerry colleges down there. So there's a depth of talent there. But if you look at their performance in the under 20 campaign this year, it wasn't good. Like, they were nowhere to be seen.
Now they lost their good lads off that.
But how many of their good lads? I mean, if they're after winning 4 minor All Irelands in a row, they have enough depth of talent that they should be very, very competitive.
Yeah, you're taking your 5 best players off that. I understand.
I still don't buy into it. Like, I think that there's underage success gives you a certain amount, but unless those players are willing to grasp it and go on, too much success at an early age can actually blunt the hunger of players. So
it
remains to be seen whether these Kerry players are going to develop into proper senior inter-county players or whether they'll fall away, because as you say, it does take a number of seasons. Like, Clifford is a complete outlier in that he's able to come on, you know, a year out of minor and perform at that level. He's a complete, you know, freak.
He's a
that doesn't
freak
happen.
Of nature,
it doesn't,
yeah.
It rarely, rarely happens. And certainly it doesn't happen that you get 8 or 10 guys who can do it and automatically take over at adult level. There's a massive, massive gap to be breached. And who is the right person, and I'm sure they're thinking about this in Kerry, who is the right man to bring these guys on for a couple of years and develop them and give them game time? Because there's not exactly the appetite in Kerry to blood players. I mean, you're not going to get much credit in Kerry for blooding 6 or 8 or 10 players in a National League game and get hammered out the door. You know, you still have to try and get results. So Fitzmaurice was trying to marry those two together for a while, where he'd try a lot of players early on in the league campaign and then he'd go back to the tried and trusted in the latter stages and they'd try and pick up a few results. This year there was a bit more of a balance to it, but even still, from
but
game
this
to
the
game
only year
there was differences.
This is the only year he could do that though, because these lads were too young. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, you can't be bringing everyone in straight in
from
minor.
But even in terms of Crowley and all these guys, like, they had been brought through in the previous, you know, few seasons. You know, it's not like they had, like, James O'Donoghue and all these guys, like, they all did have to come in gradually, like, you know, through the league. And, you know, in fairness, James O'Donoghue lit up one championship campaign. But, you know, Fitzmaurice hasn't been helped by the form of his players either. I mean, there's no way you can say that all of their players played to their best this season. Now, ultimately, if the manager isn't getting performances out of the players, that is the responsibility of the manager and the management setup. But players have to take some level of responsibility as well. You know, so there's going to be a lot of, I would say, soul searching from Kerry, you know, in the close season, because it's going to be a completely new setup, new managers. A lot of players there that are kind of well-known players that are going to be under serious, serious pressure if a new manager comes in, because they're going to absolutely have to deliver, because a new manager doesn't have that trust built into the player. He's going to look at him and say, okay, you played really well 2 years ago or 3 years ago or whatever, but I can only judge what I'm seeing and you're not doing it.
Yeah.
So from to a certain extent, that might be just the thing that Kerry need, but look, who can see into the future?
Yeah, true.
Getting hate mail though, it's sick. Like, his boy's been with Kerry for the last 24 years, since he was a minor in 94, so whatever about anything else, the fact that somebody would take the time to write a letter of abuse to him, all he's doing is trying to service his county for
effing animals. Paddy was right. Paddy got lynched back when he was out on a holiday in South Africa for this. Paddy, you were right all along. Paddy was right on a lot of things. That's basically it. I want to talk quickly, lads, about the Super 8s, because they're over now. And to whether they were a success or what the hell they were. My take on it is that they weren't a success. You look at the last game, the last round, where they hoped there was no dead rubbers. They were all dead rubbers, really, outside of Tyrone and Donegal, where two teams had to actually go at it. That turned into be a cagey affair. Monaghan destroyed a Galway team that were already through. Dublin and Roscommon had nothing to play for, and Kildare and Kerry, let's be honest, Kildare had nothing to play for, performed well, but that was just a high scoring kind of game with nothing really riding on it the minute word was filtering through. Like, you'd Kerry crowd feckin' leaving a championship match they're winning. Now, they're a disgrace, absolute disgrace. Now, I've huge growth for Kerry football, but there's an arrogance down there, obviously, among supporters, and who do they think they are? But that's the last day. So the first day of the championship was a disaster as well. It was the farcical game in Croke Park between Galway and Kerry. Half empty Croke Park both days. Hammerings that we thought we wouldn't get in the Super 8s. So you're really only looking at one round that was good, and that was the middle one. A lot of the analysis after the first round game was, oh, there's shadow boxing. And, like, I mean, it can't be shadow boxing. But I can see where these people are coming from, because that's an easy kind of conclusion to draw. But, like, I mean, it just didn't work. And I'm even thinking myself, just sticking a round robin into the business end of the championship, it just doesn't fit. Round robins traditionally in GAA are at the start, and then you get to the knockout and it's all or nothing, and that's what, then you hit, you're really into the do or die.
In practically every sport and every competition, the round robin is at the start.
Yeah.
And it's designed to weed out the weaker teams and get you all your strong teams for the latter stages. That's the purpose of it. So to lamp it in there in the middle of it or near the end of it is a complete joke, really, when you actually think about it.
I was looking forward to it, but it let me down.
I was just looking forward to the spectacle of of the top teams supposedly playing each other. That was the thing for me, because, you know, for a number of years we were looking at Division 1 teams hockey and, you know, Division 3 and 4 teams in the qualifiers, and it was just a complete waste of time, and you didn't really get to see too many good games. This was the prospect of seeing evenly matched teams play each other on a regular basis. But yeah, it kind of took the cut and thrust out of it, really.
Yeah, I think it is, because when you look at the first round, like, we did see, we didn't see good games, really. Like, I mean, for whatever reasons, for that, some are coming through the qualifiers, other are provincial championships. It wasn't kind of on a level playing field, even kind of to begin with. Never mind the round robin not quite fitting. We didn't get the classics we'd hoped for, except in round two we got Monaghan Kerry was great and Galway Kildare was great. But can you remember any more great games out of this, out of the whole thing?
No
really. Like, I mean, you'd say Dublin Donegal for a while was all right, but then it turned into a bit of a farce towards the end. Like, you're remembering a lot more bad games than you are good games. Am I being negative?
No, probably the game of the championship, even forgetting about Super 8s, was probably Laois and Wexford, wasn't it? That was one of them.
Well, that definitely was.
Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And nobody really got to see that. So, I think it was just, it's just funny the way it worked out, really, because the first round games in the Super 8, I mean, the Galway Kerry match had high expectations, and that was absolutely dire game.
Like, yeah.
Completely dire stuff. Brutal performance from probably both teams. The second round games, we had some good, like, Galway Kildare was a very exciting game. Mayo Kildare in the qualifiers was a very exciting game. And the reason that they were probably as exciting as they were was because it was back to the wall for Kildare, and Kildare are a team that approached the game in a positive manner.
Yeah, so it is. It's that approach, isn't it?
They're the reason that the games were good. Kildare had to win, and Kildare go out to win anyway.
And Kildare even brought out the best in Galway. Do you know what I mean? Galway played great against Kildare. It's just the philosophies, lads. It's just the philosophies. I don't want to get into that too much about the philosophies, but some philosophies, as far as I'm concerned, you can put all these good teams together, but if they're just not going to come out and play football against each other, we're not going to see good games, and that's the reality of it.
A few tweaks maybe next year. You know, I was looking forward to seeing the Super 8s, but I don't get the reason of having it at this point of the championship. But maybe, like, you know, taking those games at a Croke Park, throwing them around the country
somewhere. Yeah, it did make a difference.
That'll help. You know, if we do fix that for next year, because we're going to have another 2 years anyway. So
two more years.
Well, I know it's a bit of a tangent. Well, it's a complete tangent, but I mean, realistically, you have to look at it and say the reason those games are good is exactly that, is because teams came out to play. In the good games, teams went out to play the game. They went to attack and they went to try and score, and they left, you know, they left players in their more standard, you know, positions. They left more forwards up the field, but fitness levels are gone to such a level now that's the whole reason people can have this fluid game up and down the field, because players have the fitness to do it. When players didn't have the fitness to do it, you kind of had to stay more rigid, not rigidly in your positions, but you had to leave players up the field because they couldn't get up and down the pitch. So there has to, they have to look now at some sort of a rule change if we want to protect the spectacle of the game. Like, they have to do something about it, and it has to be a rule change, because it happens in all sports like that, that it gets to a stage where, like in rugby for example, the pitch is too small in rugby because the players are gone to a level that they're so fit, there's too many players, so there's no gaps, you know there's no excitement really in rugby. It's an attritional bore fest most of the time. I'm not a rugby person, but that's the way I look at it. I couldn't really watch most of it. You try and watch a game because you support Ireland or whatever, but outside of that you wouldn't just go and watch a match.
It's all the rugby league defences coming in. Defences are on top. This is the problem.
But that's the same with Gaelic football. You know, it's very, very, like, because we're doing this, we watch an awful lot of games, but it'd be very, very hard to watch them if you didn't need to watch them to try and figure out what the hell was going on. Like, you'd stick and you'd watching lower level club matches are actually far, far more entertaining because there's more mistakes, they're less tactical. The games, people just go out and play the game, and there's far more excitement. It's the way the game should, the way the game should be to a certain extent, and that the GAA have to protect the spectacle for supporters.
They do, and I think they will. I think this year has been a realisation that all the talk in the world will not bring the game back to the way it was, because you don't hate the player, hate the game. It's a tweak. The administrators now, it's in their hands.
I don't know if the tweak is out there, though. That's the problem.
Don't be negative about the tweak.
It's a law of unintended consequences. You think, okay.
But you thought the mark wasn't going to work. Let's call a spade a spade here.
Yeah, I did, but like, But
if you do something like put it to 13 aside,
we're crying even more than ever about the game, so it hasn't really helped.
Well, it's made it much more fluid in the midfield area.
We've never been more negative about football than we have been.
But the mark was never intended to change the way teams set up. The mark was intended to keep, to reward a catcher, and for those reasons it has absolutely been an unqualified success. Like, I mean, that's, the mark was never going to change the way teams played. It was just a little tweak to a playing rule to reward midfielders, and everyone said it would slow the game down, it would do this, that and the other, and it did none of those things.
Don't run down
efforts at improving the game. Why not just try one for a year and then forget about it if it doesn't work?
The mark is grand, but the problem with the game is that there's 14 men behind the ball. That's the problem, and that some teams play keep ball. There's no solution to get teams out of that unless you start implementing positional changes or you go to 13 aside.
I disagree. There's a couple of things that could be tried. Like, to me, if you try to go 13 aside, what you actually do is make the game
easier to break into.
Well, what you do is you just make it that the fitness levels have to go to a completely new level, and within five years everyone will be still playing the same way with 13 players.
So
what you have to do is change it. Like, it has to be a complete change of tactic. Like, maybe you just make a rule of you're only allowed 8 players inside your own half. 10 players inside your own half. That's easy enough to police. Like, it's not that difficult,
I think.
There's designated forwards that have to stay up the field, or you have to retain a certain number in the opposition half at all times, be that 4 or be that 5.
But you have to retain. But what if the half back goes forward, you can't track them?
No, you have to have four up at all times. What you would do there is you have 4 designated defenders and 4 designated forwards, and they stay in their half of the field, so you can still have your attack wing backs, defensive wing forwards, but you have to have 4, which would be your standard full back line and maybe your centre half back, centre half forward, that they have to stay in their own half. Now, that's not difficult to police.
Like,
that could definitely absolutely work. We don't have time for this. Like, I mean, if we'd been dragged into this now, I didn't want to get into it. We'll do a full show on potential rule changes that'll help the game, and me and Conan can argue. Bernard Brogan, quickly, lads, before we get into the match. Bernard Brogan came back, lads, so he got 9 minutes at the end, didn't touch the ball, which is surprising. You'd think one of the lads on the field would say, let's get Berno a hand pass, or let's get him onto the ball. Because I often found when I'm coming on as a sub, you love just someone on the team to say, let's just get him into the game. He needs this more than me. I've been on the field, I'm playing well. He needs it more than me. And sometimes you think, this dickhead has ignored me, I've just run on the field. Give me a pass.
Well, we all know the egos of these Dublin players. So they're all trying to look after their own patch there and not pass it to him.
Very disappointing. But he obviously got injured. Was it the first league game against Kildare in Croke Park? Like, I mean, it's been a serious turnaround from crucial injury from Bernard. I'm a huge Bernard Brogan fan, a brilliant, brilliant player. And, like, I mean, serious dedication there to get back in that time frame.
Yeah, well, he's done remarkably well. That 9 minutes gets him an All Ireland medal now, doesn't it?
An All Ireland medal. I actually saw a funny tweet. Aidan O'Hara, he's a soccer writer with The Independent. He said that the most impressive thing of Bernard Brogan is getting a Sunday evening out on his own 4 weeks after having twins, which is very, very impressive from Bernard. Right, we've gone over time on top of the show. We'll be back and talk about the matches.
I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even start, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
Okay, we'll start with Tyrone and Donegal, lads. So, like, I mean, 2:17, Tyrone ran up, Donegal 1:13. I flicked over from the hurling. It was probably a very unfair comparison, really. You're turning over from hurling, which is a point in it in an All-Ireland semi-final in the last couple of minutes, the excitement was at fever pitch, and then you go across to the Donegal-Tyrone game and there was no atmosphere and it was sideways passing. It was like, oh God, no, it really felt like work.
I know.
It wasn't a fair comparison.
You might as well be switching over to baseball. Like, it doesn't matter. The comparison between hurling and Gaelic football needs to stop because they're two totally different games. Like, footballers don't get the ball and just lurry it as far as they can every time they get the ball. They can't score from 120 metres out. You know what I'm saying? So you can't compare the two games. The hurling was a phenomenal game to watch because it was competitive right to the very end.
Yeah.
But if you were a hurling aficionado like yourself, should be more critical of all the chances wasted by both teams in both games.
Oh, no, listen, don't worry.
If there was 20 wides in a football match, we'd be doing some giving.
No, we would. But we're disposed to criticise the game, and because hurling's more minority sport, they always try to be positive about it. Like, I mean, I don't think anyone would ever argue about that. That's the fact that minority sports, look at rugby, it's a complete minority sport in Ireland, and they do nothing but try and build it up and say how great it is, even though it's shite to watch a lot of the games. You don't see many tries anymore. Defences are on top. It doesn't have much. You made that comparison at the top of the show. Like, some of those games are deplorable to watch. Those scrums are an abomination. Let's be honest. Like, I mean, it's terrible, terrible game to watch.
Rugby rule changes on Thursday.
But let's be honest. Like, I mean, aren't you better off be honest and like critique it when it needs to be critiqued than actually just be cheerleaders for it? But like, I mean, this is the reality that this game. I don't know if I'm getting gassed out kind of at the end of a long, hard season. We're on the go since February with four shows a week. Or like, am I kind of thinking, like, these defensive games all follow the same pattern. So the first half is very hard to watch. It's recycling the ball. Defences are on top because they've loads of energy. They can get hands on. It's very hard to break a tackle. There's no spare men. Their zones are set up. Then one team might go down, they get a little bit desperate, holes start opening up in the second half, and suddenly we start seeing lots of running scores, not so much kicking scores, but the game turns out to be well watchable then in the second half, and you see some nice scores. We know Tyrone are a fantastic team to watch when their running game works. When their running game doesn't work, they're not a fantastic team at all to play. But Tyrone were outstanding in the second half when they smelt blood off Donegal, and Donegal kind of had got so disjointed when Thompson strangely got taken off with the wind. It was a ridiculous decision, and then McNeilish went off injured. So they're two good long range shooters. Langan was misfiring then. He got a good one at the start second half, but his radar was off. Then you're three good long range shooters with the wind, all not in, two not on the field and one not hitting them. Yeah. Donegal really had nothing then after that, and Tyrone smelt blood, and the minute Donegal dropped their heads, Tyrone are running all over
it's
them.
It's amazing
then.
How quickly they can rack
up. Oh, they smell blood.
They
yeah, because like, I mean, you're heading towards the last 5 minutes and there's not much in this game, and then Tyrone just destroyed them.
They're fairly relentless, Tyrone. Like, the running power, the fitness, the physicality. In fairness, their panel as well, guys coming off the bench with energy. McGeary has made a massive, massive impact two games in a row with that running power from deep. And like, he's back in his own full back line, hoovering up ball, and then he's getting on the end of a move to far end. But like, he's doing it for 20 minutes, but it's relentless for the 20 minutes. And other teams just don't seem to have, they don't have that backup that can match that. I mean, Donegal substitutes didn't make the required impact. And when they needed them to make an impact, Tyrone's players had to make an impact, and they did.
Brennan brought on for Thompson. You're with the wind. What kind of a substitution was that? Like, I mean, that was a strange one. Anthony Thompson for Frank McGinn. Anthony Thompson, at this stage, is he still in the mix?
Cian Mulligan didn't get a run, which I'm surprised at. And Steve McBrearty didn't get a run. Now, I don't know whether they're carrying injuries or what, but I mean, they're players that have made impacts in games earlier on in the season. You wonder why. And they're attack-minded players. They needed to score. Just a couple of decisions like that. Now, again, I don't know. Obviously, we don't know the full information.
Until Tyrone got the goal, I thought Donegal were well in the game. And I don't think these substitutions helped Donegal's case at all. I think on the flip side, Tyrone's did work. Donegal's made them completely disjointed. What were Donegal doing for the last 15 minutes? They had no clue up front. They had no clue.
They also weren't, they just didn't have the legs to stick with the Tyrone runners either.
No.
Bottom line, Tyrone were getting overlaps. Like, Tyrone were 3-on-2, 4-on-3, breaking forward on the counter-attack, and Donegal players just weren't able to get back with them. Because they had to commit to the attack, but it was still the same sort of stuff, which is pretty much, can we get the ball to Ryan McHugh and what can he do with it then?
Yeah.
That's the Donegal kind of, when they're up against that sort of a mass defence, that's the way it ends up being. And McHugh, in fairness to him, looked like he ran out of steam and was probably more tightly marked in the second half. Myler, he gave Myler a bit of a run around in the first half, but
he can't do it all in his own.
No, he can't do it all. It's completely unfair to expect him to do it all, because he's going to be targeted as well. He's going to always draw 2 to 3 Tyrone players in, and does ship an awful lot of heavy tackles because he puts in for it. You know, he goes to break the line. But look, there was just no bite to Donegal in the last 20 minutes. They tried hopelessly to put Michael Murphy in the full forward line. They kicked one ball in, and then he probably says, well, what's the point of being in here? And he came back out the field again. So it was just very demoralising for them in the last 20 minutes, because they looked to me like they were gassed out. They ran out of ideas, and every time Tyrone went forward, they were dangerous and they got scores, and it was just blow after blow after blow. And by the end, look, sure, the goal with the last kick of the game puts a bit of a gloss on it, but that was just the way the game ended up. And despite the fact that Donegal had been in a really, really strong position early in the second half.
Yeah, no, it's definitely that. And like, I mean, it, like, the Tyrone kickouts, I thought were interesting enough. Like, I mean, Morgan, like, I think he can go along a little bit more. Like, I mean, Donegal were doing the Kerry 4 across the full forward line and really, really pressurising it. But when you're doing that, there's loads of space on, like, a Rory Beggan would stick them to both wings. Imagine a Peter Hart running onto them. Now, Morgan did it once in the second half, and it absolutely worked. Like, I mean, why are they not going a little bit longer on their kickouts when they see that massive press? Like, I don't know what I tweeted about Tyrone. If Tyrone started every game like they were 4 points down, what an awesome team you'd be. It's a mindset thing with Tyrone. Like, we talked about after the Dublin game, where Mickey Hart said we went for it after 63 minutes.
Yeah.
Why can't they go for it? They're like an awesome team when they get their tails up and they're buzzing around you. And they started turning Donegal over up the pitch. They started, like, really... They were just a completely re-energised, reinvigorated team in the second half. And it's like, why can't you start like that? What a great team they looked.
Absolutely. To me, part of it is due to the personnel.
But is it tactics that they're trying to wear the team down in the first half? They're going like, let's wear these down, let's get these tired. But like, are we just giving them too much credit for that?
I think
they're 4 points down. They're like, we have to start playing now. That's
the sort of thing Jimmy McGuinness would talk about after it happens.
yeah.
You know, as if it was a master plan, which it clearly isn't. Like.
Yeah.
So. Look, to me,
that's a great point.
Most of the time, it just comes down to the players you have on the pitch. Like, Lee Brennan is on, Mark Bradley's on. They're better players than McCalliskey and the guys that they're in for.
I know, Donnelly went off as well.
McGeary came in, Richie Donnelly. Just gave them a bit more energy around the pitch. Yeah. Just better ball carriers, more pace. Bit more cleverness in their approach to the game as well at times, and on the day just performed really well. So I think when you have more quality on the pitch, you're going to look a better team. There's going to be better interchange. Like, Lee Brennan had the ability to take his man on and beat him. Nobody else was really doing that in the game, you know, with a bit of skill. And he came on with a point to prove. He's been out of the game for an awful long time, so he was mad hungry for a ball. He was showing well.
But this is the thing.
And he comes on maybe against, look, you could argue the point, the master plan. Yeah, it comes on against a defender who's slightly more tired than he would be in the first half, or has less cover.
But this is the thing, though. So now everyone will be clamouring for Lee Brennan to start, and I can see that. Lee Brennan started against Monaghan, and he didn't get a kick of the ball. Ronan O'Neill didn't get a kick of the ball. Like, I mean, in that first half against Donegal, do you think Brennan would have got a kick of the ball? He wouldn't have. It's just Tyrone's mindset changed in the second half. He got on the ball. So Tyrone will play Monaghan in the All-Ireland semi-final. If Tyrone go out in the first half like they did against Donegal, is Rory Brennan going to get a play well? He's not. He's just not.
They're not going to give him the platform to play.
They're not going to get any ball up. They're not going to get any sort of ball up the field where they can service him. So you're going to have the same old stuff that everybody in behind the ball. Roy running up the far end of the field, scratching his arse, and then hoping for a break through the hands where he'll come around in the loop. He might, but then the other team will have a lot of players back because Tyrone have just run it up the field. Like, I mean, Tyrone just need to start playing in the second every game with Brennan on the field, because we've seen Brennan on the field and we're hoping this is a new Tyrone, but then we're seeing Tyrone being so laboured with their build up that Brennan's a waste of time. He's a great little player, he's a magic little player, and so is Bradley. Let's see more of these magic little players. Like, they can kick wonderful scores, wonderful dummies, but without them getting serviced from further up the field, sure, what's the point in picking them?
I think the personnel point you make is valid, Cian, but what that does is it changes the mindset.
Yeah,
as well,
it does. Yeah, that's the thing. Like that's the point is that when you have better players, not better players, but when you have certain players on the field with certain skill sets, changes the attitude of everyone around them because when he's getting the ball, he's maybe being direct. He's going at the opposition, and all of a sudden, everyone around on the pitch is going, all right, now we can actually... Yeah, this is happening.
No, he inspired Tyrone.
He's not getting the ball and just recycling it back. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, well, I'll pass it across and you'll pass it. And nobody actually...
No,
tries to make something happen in a positive light.
And that's the great thing. In fairness to Jamie Brennan, he's just that magic absolutely. Player who's just like, how easy is it to win a ball and stay going the same way that you've won it and pass it back on? How easy is that? What like? But these lads are never giving the ball away. But what are they making happen? Are you not better off drop the shoulder and take him on the inside? And look, you might get cornered up by two lads. If that happens, then turn back out. But don't turn back out if there's just one fella on. Like, make something happen. Inject pace. Throw a dummy. That's what Bradley does. That's what Brennan does. That's what the two Brennans do. That's what the good forwards do. And if you don't have forwards that are capable or willing to take that chance and throw a dummy and go past someone, what's the point in having them in there, really? Like, I mean, all you're doing is going to win a ball. And in fairness to Richie Donnelly, that's generally what he does. He just wins it. And then just like, well, he can win a few good balls. He generally just recycles it back out again.
He does a lot. And in fairness to him, I thought, like, I even saw a little bit of development in him at the weekend that he did try on occasion to try and get his shot away. He did look like he was trying to play like more of an orthodox forward. I'd say it's something that maybe Stephen O'Neill has, someone has been telling him, is if you're in there, you have to get scores. You can't just, you know, show for a ball or win a ball and recycle it back out. You need to try and make something happen. And to his credit, I thought he was on occasions trying to do it, but he's just not as skillful or as dynamic a player as Lee Brennan or as Bradley, who are, like, they are so hard to tie down. They've such pace, low to the ground, very, very difficult. Like, they're very exciting players to watch. Yeah. Like, they don't have the same power that somebody like Donnelly will have, but they just give you something. Just give you something different, like, and they're able to, they're game changers, they're game breakers, they're able to just create something out of nothing. And to me, players that have the ability to do that are always worth a shot in a team, like, because they can just make something happen out of nothing.
No, they can, yeah, and you'd love to see them getting a bit more service. So who does McGeary? I agree with you on McGeary. I think he's a great player. He was captain of their under-21s when they beat Tip. Like, this lad is a real leader and a really good player. But who gets dropped if he wants to start?
When he came on, I don't know. I think he might have been playing midfield, and Peter Hart ended up actually as kind of the lone forward. It was like Peter Hart, Brennan, and Bradley were sort of the three men up. But at that stage, you know, Myler was maybe off the field. I think maybe Sludden was gone off the pitch. So they've kind of a bit of fluidity in their team. To me, one of the big differences when they took off Frank Burns, they seem to go back to the one sweeper and push another man out the field. And to me, with Colm Kavanagh back there, who was quite lucky, I think, not to get a black card for a late tackle on Ryan McHugh.
That was a blatant black card. You won't get a more clear cut.
That was a time when the game was, like, Donegal were in control of the match. Kavanagh was after getting himself a stupid yellow card wrestling with McNeilish. Late tackle on McHugh should have been a black card and a red, couldn't have been replaced. Donegal probably run out... possibly easy winners
because Kavanagh was outstanding.
In the last 20 minutes, he was unbelievable. Yeah. He stripped a load of ball, he was blocking and everything. So, like, I don't know. Like, you go back to it and say, did the ref, like, all this positivity about Tyrone, and we're talking about the negativity of Donegal in the last few minutes. But what a key refereeing decision, you could argue, cost Donegal the game. And it wasn't even a difficult one, it happened right in front
of
him.
He saw it,
yeah.
And he didn't even come back to it to even talk to him, and he saw this.
He
missed a lot of double bounces. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's very obvious. But, like, I mean, I don't want to start talking about referees, but that was a disgraceful one. Tiernan McCann was really back. Tiernan McCann was back to the old Tiernan McCann. Brilliant and infuriating all at the same time. So Tiernan McCann kicks an outstanding score off his left foot early in the game. He had a very good game. He loves those broken play, and he got loads of broken play in the second half and got in and was able to show his pace. I disagree with Keane in saying that the hand pass absolutely was a pass. I don't think it was a hand pass over the bar. I think it was a no look pass across. No, I think he was. I do think he was looking at the goals when he hand passed it, but I don't think that means that he didn't mean to pass it across.
Loughran was in there for a while, though.
He thought Loughran was there. He looked at Loughran first, so he was aware of where Loughran was. And then when he hand passed it, I think he just went off kind of disguised it across. Like, I mean, there's no way it could have been that bad, a hand pass over the bar. He wasn't even being challenged. It couldn't be that bad that just happened to land into Loughran's.
We don't think it was that bad. We think it was
Good fortune goes your way sometimes. I mean, when you have a mishit hand pass that ends up with a game changing goal, and then the ref doesn't send off one of your key men for an obvious black card, these things can sometimes go your way.
Another thing Tiernan McCann did, when that pass was palmed into the goals, he turns around and trash talks and shouts into somebody's face. I don't know who it was. Another thing Tiernan McCann did, and I think this is just it's not Tiernan McCann is the only person doing this, but Tiernan McCann was maybe the most blatant diver of this I've ever seen.
So
Langan is standing there with both hands out, which is what you'd ask your defenders to do. Tiernan McCann literally ran into one of the hands that was out and fell back onto the ground, and Langan got a yellow card. Like, Quinlan just was a disgrace yesterday, really, when you look at his performance overall. Langan is allowed to put his two arms out. He didn't even put his hand towards McCann. They were just out and McCann ran into it and fell backwards. Like, you can't do that. That's taking it to a whole new level of diving. We know, we've talked on the podcast, players are accentuating these high tackles. You put your hand up high, they're all flinging themselves back onto the ground, all doing it now. You see it all the time. There's so many tackles that look dangerous and they're the more dangerous, but McCann brought it to a new level, as I have not witnessed this before, where you're just running into a hand that's there.
That was a good solid tackle from Langan straight across his chest, and Tiernan McCann had buckled his knees before he even made contact with Langan. And threw the head back. But I don't mind. It's a bit irritating to look at, but I wouldn't necessarily mind him, you know what I mean, drawing the free or whatever.
No, but we're drawing frees all our lives.
Get up. Don't pretend that your head is sore. Like, stop rubbing your head. Get up and get on with the game. You've conned the ref into a free. Stop trying to get your opposing player sort of booked or sent off. I think that's... I'm all for clever play, but I wouldn't put in for that sort of nonsense, to be honest.
I know, and that's fair enough, because, like, I mean, do we criticise players? I do think it looks bad when
Damien Comer is the biggest diver playing Gaelic football at the minute. Like, every time he gets the ball, he grabs his opponent by the jersey in front, runs forward and dives, jumps on the ground theatrically and pulls his man down on top of him. I mean, like, he's making them look spectacular. He give Neymar a run for his money in terms of how bad he makes the tackles look. I mean, Comer goes to ground, you're like, geez, he's after getting absolutely poleaxed there. And you look at the replay and you're like, Comer had his 2 feet off the ground long before your man made contact.
Yeah,
he's diving into the tackle and he's winning frees.
Yeah, no, listen, he did. Like, I mean, they're all buying. Like, I mean, I don't blame lads for buying frees, because sometimes you don't get frees you deserve, and I understand the buying it. It's the pretending to be injured.
Yeah, it's the pretending to be hurt and getting the guy sent off. Yeah,
that's different. We'll give Galway Monaghan a mention, because Monaghan obviously were outstanding the whole night. This was a team that had to win versus a team that absolutely didn't have to win. The psychology was completely different. Galway were never at the pitch of this game, never at it. They scored the first point and then Monaghan destroyed them against the wind. So the game was over at half time here, because it was a good, as usual in Salt Hill, a good strong breeze going down into one goal. Shane Walsh misses an early free. Shane Walsh just wasn't at it. He had a different role than he usually has. Like, I mean, I read a bit of Joe Brawley's piece on this that he tweeted out. Like, I've never seen anything as the fake news and that this lad puts out there, Joe Brawley. Like, I like Joe, but as a pundit, I just can't entertain him. He says Galway's rigmarole was just always as it was. They went into their 1-13-1 formation from the throw-in. That's fake news. Now, we've already seen fake news analysis from Joe in the Galway-Roscommon Connacht final, where he said Galway changed things at halftime when they didn't. And I spoke to Kevin Walsh on the show the day after that, and he admitted that they didn't change anything. Things just, like, I mean, balls went to hand and they were playing with the wind and they dominated midfield and it looked like they might have changed. And he said they did nothing different, right? So that was the point we were making. So this 1-13-1 is fake news. Because as you know here, I have a keen interest in Galway and how they set up. So I was watching them. They left Farley, Comer and Burke up front at all times. Unless something unbelievable happened. They were the three up front. Now, that was different to what they did against Kildare, for example, where Walsh was part of that three and Walsh was winning the ball out in front. So they had Varley as being that first lad breaking, and he's not at the races at that role. So Galway never got the kicking game going. They never played any good football. Walsh was being followed by Colin Walsh, and he was dropping too deep. So he wasn't getting ball in dangerous positions where he could turn and give it in. And Galway were just all over the place. Johnny Heaney wasn't playing. Now everybody knows Johnny Heaney plays, wears number 7, but plays wing forward, and Sean Kelly plays wing back. So Sean Kelly is as limited as a player now as you're going to see. Like, I mean, I was watching him the other night, he's in front of me on the stand. So he's marking Vinnie Corey as a wing forward. So he's just dropping off Vinnie Corey, trying to get back into plug up into a zone or plug up an area, and Vinnie Corey's letting him on, but Vinnie Corey's just hugging the sideline but letting him on. So because Galway aren't defending with as big a numbers as they used to defend with, because they're leaving three up, unlike the fake news that Joe Brawley is trying to say, it's fake news. I was at the game, I saw it. This is fake news. 131 is fake news, right? So Corey is waiting out on the sideline, right, and he's waiting for Kelly to inevitably get sucked in to tackle someone. The minute that happens, Corey's gone, and he's that spare man out the wing. Amount of times he saw Monaghan patiently hold it, and then all of a sudden Vinnie Corey's popping out of nowhere out on the sideline. This was it. But like, I mean, if you've got the 13 men back like Joe with that fake news is, you'll have enough bodies back to cover Corey, but there weren't. Galway weren't intense in the tackle, got no good turnovers. Monaghan deserved credit for that, because they didn't bring it into the tackle very often, they recycled it. The Galway couldn't get their kicking game going like they could against Kildare, because Walsh was dropping too deep. And there's loads of reasons for this. Monaghan at the pitch of it, Monaghan, a very, very good team, had to win. Galway psychologically just weren't at that game, and that's the reality of it. And like, I mean, that's how I would sum up this kind of game.
Yeah, look, Monaghan on the attack I thought were very good. They kept an awful lot of wit in the play, and they dragged Galway around the place, and then were able on occasion to create those little spaces on the attack, because nearly all Monaghan's attacks are, they're either really slow or they're very fast. There's kind of no in between. It's either the real methodical slow build up, or they're hitting really fast on the counter attack, maybe from a actually their counter attacks are almost always from their own kickouts, where Began gets one over the top and it's 2-3 passes and they have a score.
That's where they get joy.
And McInnesby got a brilliant one the second half of that, but they got a few excellent scores with those fast breaks from their own defence. I'd have to question, like, there's some of the Galway players, I mean, I'd have to seriously question how Sean Andy O'Kelly stays on the pitch for Galway as long as he does in every game, because he's the one player that they have that just continually loses the ball. He never gets left back as the two in the fullback.
No,
right? And he's absolutely terrible in possession. So I struggle to see what he actually offers the team when he's not playing in the full back line. Like, He evidently isn't trusted by the Galway management to be one of the tight marking inside full back line in terms of the defensive
in
jersey.
In his defence, he does inject pace when he gets it. Give him his due, he does give the ball away, but he always goes forward with the ball.
But, like, I don't really care what he does, because he ends up losing the ball. He runs forward, he solos the ball too high in the air, or he kicks it away, or he ends up just running into trouble and losing it. I just can't understand why. If you have a guy who's definitely and probably a very robust defender in terms of a traditional full-back position, it's just strange to me that he's the guy that is used in the full-back line, because you saw Kine breaking forward to good effect in some of their previous matches against Kerry. So to me, I just think it's strange that they wouldn't have that tweak. But look, it was a game that Galway didn't need to win. I'm very surprised at how many of their first string played the game.
Yeah.
To me, again, I said it, they should have played a complete second string. I don't know what impact losing that game will have for them, because even if they weren't going full tilt, which they clearly weren't, in their head they were. They thought they were. Like, they were preparing to go full tilt.
But they'll separate themselves from that. Like, I mean, I don't think that result will have any impact on next week. Psychologically, Kevin Walsh will have done a
Malachy. Did Sean Kelly go off injured at the end of the game with a pulled hamstring?
I didn't notice that now.
Well, he was being carried off the field. So again, look, at if you lose one of your starting players, it was a stupid, bad
result.
Shane
Walsh rolled his ankle early and stayed on the field. He was down for a good while, and it was actually at the time of a free, and Comer ended up taking the free quickly because Shane Walsh was down and took a 1-2 and kicked it.
I just can't understand what your starting 15 would get in preparation for an All-Ireland semi-final, going out and playing 70 minutes and scoring 8 points.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Oh no, they obviously won't get anything, but like, I mean, they'll still, Kevin Walsh will do a Malachy O'Rourke on it, and he'll get into the dressing room and he'll say, lads, we're in a semi-final.
Well done, lads. We've lulled Dublin into a false sense of security.
Well, psychologically, that's what he will say. Dublin won't know what's going to hit them next week, lads. We're in the perfect position to go into this game. This is the best thing that could have happened to us. We have to beat Dublin at some stage. Who are we to fear Dublin? In fact, I prefer getting Dublin now in the semi-final and the final. Do you know what I mean? You heard all these things before. This will all be flipped on its head and Galway will be primed going into the I don't think that's the end of Galway at all. They've been too good all year to allow one game where they're already through. Now, it was a dreadful performance. You can't say anything. Mm. One thing Galway are kind of stuck on is Lavelle's kickouts, and I'll leave it on this. Like, I mean, the contrast in the kickouts and just the importance of Beggan. Like, I mean, he hits anybody he wants, but Lavelle can't hit anybody he wants. And Lavelle doesn't have a long boom and kickout to the point where Galway have the weirdest tactics from their kick out. Now, I noticed this against Kerry and Croke Park, but it was on the far side of the field where I noticed it, but it was right in front of this now. So Cook and Tomás Flynn line up on the sideline, right? So they're on the opposition 65, and they're on the sideline, both of them together. So the whole pitch is open for Lavelle to hit targets. He's not really able to hit them. So the amount of times you see Lavelle looking around, nothing on, eventually he'll throw his hands in the air, which is probably the signal to go to the two lads, and he ends up just kicking it out to the two lads. Now, that's obviously his plan B if no other good kick out, fast kick out works. It seems to happen an awful lot that there's not a good kick out, because with all that middle of the field open, Beggan would have a field day. Like, he would have an absolute field day. Now, Lavelle can't have that field day, but even the tactics of having the two lads beside each other. So Flynn won a couple of balls, but where is he winning them? He's winning them out on the sideline. There isn't even lads off the shoulder because he's stuck out on the sideline. Like, I mean, it's not an attacking tactic.
Look, you can flip that his head and say it's a great attacking tactic if it works, because what you've done is you've pulled a large number of players into a zone and you've opened up the rest of the field. Flynn is about, I don't know, what is he? 6 foot six or six
it's
foot
huge,
seven?
Yeah.
Like, he's a monster, and you have Cook beside him, basically ensuring that nobody else jumps with Flynn apart from Flynn's own man, which means and Lavelle is hanging them up there,
and that's what Cook does. Cook wrestles his man and lets Flynn
wrestles up. His man, make sure nobody comes in on top of Flynn, to be fair, probably won two or three of them in a row. Now, if they get a quick transfer to runners coming through the centre, the whole pitch is opened up and they've sucked bodies in. So I think there's merit in the tactic because they have the tools to put it into action. But I suppose just, in a game like that the other day, Monaghan are sort of just, look, as with most of the top teams, they, whatever sort of thing you throw at them, they seem to be able to sort of deal with it. They've done enough sort of tactical work on the training field that they're kind of aware of where gaps are, and they have very good collective responsibility. Like, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise if Conor McManus saw a hole appearing somewhere in the middle of the field, he'd nearly sprint out from the full forward line to cover it. Like, that's what these teams are. They have a huge work ethic and collective responsibility.
No, he does. The only thing I would say on that now, because Flynn even got a couple of marks over there, I didn't see a quick transfer to someone through the middle. So then I'm wondering, is that, like, if that's a clear tactic, then you want
to see
Flynn
gain possession. Yeah,
you want to see Flynn on his toes and saying, "Where's the runner?" There was none of that.
I'm just saying, there's merit if I was coaching it on.
Yeah, I would love. If I saw that though, that if Flynn did that, that there's a clear tactic that then somebody's breaking or there's a plan, but it didn't look like it. When if that's a set play where Flynn's getting a mark over there, where's the evidence of why that was doing? That's why I thought it was a confused tactic.
Yeah, well, even in terms of possession retention, if you're Galway and your goalkeeper isn't that comfortable with picking out passes and a team has pressed right up on top of you, it's all slowed down. Right, well, let's kick it to our big midfielder, right isolated on the wing. So even if you do lose it, the opposition have the ball on the sideline, well outside the 45. They're way outside the scoring zone and you have all your players in position. So it's a sort of a, if you're to look at it, it's maybe somewhat a bit of the way Galway are. They're maybe that little bit conservative in terms of the way Monaghan on their kickouts, I suppose, because they have Beggan, they're an attacking weapon. It's always an attacking weapon. Very, very positive. It's rarely just about ball retention close to goal. He does that on occasion, but that's only nearly if the attacking option isn't on.
It's nearly Monaghan's best attacking option because it's where you'll have an orthodox formation. They have the ball and they're going to be hit on the chest somewhere. So, like, I mean, they kind of know that these are the plays that we have to get scores off. And they're the plays where if we're moved the ball fast enough, there's scores to be got outside of the old kind of, recycling kind of stuff. Like, I mean, the difference in it was unbelievable. Right, listen, we'll come back here, lads, and we'll do performance of the weekend.
is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we were talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just been in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
out
at me
of a crowded area. Isn't
you're looking at me with such a confused confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Paddy Power performance of the weekend. We have a few different nominations here. We probably spoke about Lee Brennan a little bit there. I thought Lee Brennan a little bit kind of like Shane Dowling for Limerick the week before, in that you can have lads that play well all you want, but Tyrone wouldn't have won that game without him. Like, I mean, that's without his injection of class and the whole psychology of actually let's go at these aren't that good, we'll go at them, we'll play. Brennan plays with his chest out, which is absolutely the Tyrone way. I actually think this system is not the Tyrone even mentality. Tyrone are bloody, they buzz around you. Remember the clip of Kerry back in 2003, obviously, and you had all the forwards and they're lighting on you and they're sticking their chest out and they're like, they're afraid of no one. Mm-hmm. Whereas this tactics kind of make them look like they're afraid of your attack. You know, that it's not, it's just, for me, it's not the Tyrone way. I was up in Cookstown at that live show. Tyrone have a massive self-confidence. Like, I mean, just talk to Muggsy and Brian Mulligan and these lads. They just, there was nobody better than these lads. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, now their system is almost saying, you have a better attack than us and we're going to hope that you give us a break. And I'm not going to get into it. I keep getting sucked into it because I just want to see Tyrone in the second half more than I saw at the weekend. Anyways, Lee Brennan, absolutely brilliant. David Clifford, absolutely outstanding. Again, what was it that he scored in total? Was it 2-6 or something like that? Brilliant. So, like, his Super 8 has just launched him to being the superstar that we knew he was. But again, we've talked about him a good bit. Would like to see more of his scores on the Sunday game last night. Ryan McInnespy, lads, 4 from play. He's had an unbelievable season. So, consistently excellent as a wing forward. Now, a working wing forward, but also a wing forward that's able to get scores. And the one thing you say about Monaghan is that they're getting everybody back behind the ball except for McManus and McCarthy. There are only 2 men. So arguably Monaghan played a more defensive system than Galway, because Galway left 3 up, you know. But like, and Donegal will have everybody back bar 2, but the narrative around Donegal is that they've moved on to a more attacking game plan where Galway are, you know. But this is the propaganda, Joe Brawley propaganda, and a lot of people fall for this. So, like, I mean, Monaghan are still a very defensive team, but Monaghan are desperately trying. Fintan Kelly's a very important player for them as well, in that when they turn the ball over, they're trying to get back up in front of the ball so that there's an option between the half forward line and the full forward line. I think that's where Monaghan have changed this year, that instead of always working the ball through the hands, now they worked it through the hands a lot more against Galway than they did against Kerry, for example. But Kelly, McInnespy and these lads are breaking back up the field to be there before. Do you know what I mean? To have a little bit more traditional structure. And I think that's been the key to how Monaghan have evolved. And yeah, McInnespy is vital to it.
They do. When they do turn it over, they break and they break wide. And there nearly is always an option for the kick. It's not the kick pass into the full forward line, but it's a kick down the wing 40, 50 metres.
To somebody
who's in a position. So I think from that point of view, they've definitely evolved and they're much, much improved. Carl O'Connell was phenomenal at the weekend.
Yeah.
Him as well.
Matched off on Brannigan, and they had a great battle, but which Carl O'Connell obviously shaded.
Yeah, McInnespy had a huge, huge game for Monaghan as well.
Yeah, 4 from play, McInnespy, Connor.
Monaghan are, I think, attacking wise, one of the closest things to Dublin now that we've seen. Like, just obviously because they have Began, but the way we're comparing Tyrone and how, like, Richie Donnelly wins the ball and pops straight back out, whereas Monaghan are always trying to sort of find that little inroad, and then they're so quick at moving. And as soon as they feel somebody's about to get in on them or tackle them, the balls pop back out, recycled out to the wing where there's always width and stuff. And this is where boys like McInnespy then they shine all of a sudden, because they're all trying to break in. And then he had one of those days. Like Niall Scully scores 2 goals out of nowhere. Ryan McInnespy comes in and scores 4 points out of nowhere.
I wouldn't say it's out of nowhere though, because, like, I mean, McInnespy scored 2 brilliant scores against Tyrone in Oma from his wrong side, right? So he's swinging him over. It's like, where are these after coming out of? But he's brilliant for from that side. He did it against Leash at a really important juncture where Leash, were, I think, could have got back to 3 or 4. And he swung over unbelievable score from that side. He's been chipping in with scores all year. Yeah. He's actually a lot more accurate than you might from that wrong side.
Yeah, he's been a huge find for Monaghan this year. He's one of their kind of players that they've that has massively developed from their league campaign. You know, when you compare it to previous seasons, he was coming on as a sub, or he was in and out of the team, but he wasn't really as prominent as he has been this season. And his performances in the championship have been really, really good. And he's actually turned into sort of a key player for Monaghan.
Yeah, no, he absolutely has. Darren Hughes was outstanding right throughout the game. You know what you're going to get with Darren Hughes. He was just brilliant. He plays that role really well. Kicked a screamer of a point in the first half when it was really needed. And he's the old dog for the hard road, really, with Monaghan. He nearly kind of, you know, he's a symbol for the team, really. They need him playing well, dropping back into defence when needed, but also getting back up there and breaking through lines. He's a real workhorse for Monaghan, and always has been a real workhorse.
Yeah, and again, one of their more experienced players. You look at the likes of himself, Vinnie Corey, Colin Walsh. They've been around a number of years, and they just continue to be able to put in these performances. Like, just thinking about it, like, Monaghan are the sort of team that you kind of hate to play against, but you'd almost hate to play for them as well, you know, in terms of the way they play the game. I mean, McManus is the only, like, as a forward, a very difficult team to play even on, because, like, you look at, say, somebody like Jack McGarren, like, he can't get into the team because there's only really room for one forward.
Yeah, well, two. He's between him and McCarthy.
Between him and McCarthy.
Well, McCarthy's
yeah.
not playing well, lads. Like, no. I mean, at what point does McCarthy take a rest here? Because yeah. he's been unimpressive for a few games now, and McCarron's
been unimpressive for longer.
Well, he has, yeah.
I think that forward line is better than what McCarron could offer.
I'll tell you, if you compare McCarthy, right, to Brennan and Bradley, McCarthy has that trick. He never uses it. He's Mr. Recycle. He's Mr. I'm not making a mistake. And this is a confidence thing, I'd imagine, because yeah, you don't want to yeah. go into contact and spill it up. Brennan just is a cocky little player, you know, by him. And Bradley's just so light in his feet, you'd be doing well to try and get hold of him. But McCarthy is that style of player, and he's a dummy solo, and he has a drop of a shoulder, and he has a little bit of pace. He's not using that. I think it's a confidence thing, because he's Mr. Recycle, and there's nothing worse than seeing a little player like him recycling it off, and he just doesn't want to throw that dummy and go past his man.
Yeah, well, I suppose, look, you're always looking for a player like him to, because he has the capability to explode into a game and kick 3 or 4 points from play or get a goal. So it just hasn't happened for him so far in the championship, but we've seen that he's capable of doing it. So look, the thing about it is, from game to game, these guys have such talent and ability that on the day they're capable of producing. We just haven't seen it consistently from the like of him, but sometimes it can only take one game, and if he gets a score early in a match, he can just light up the game, you know. Yeah. That's what the players of this sort of quality, that's what they're capable of doing. Like, and they're rare, like, you know, the players like that are kind of rare, like, so you have to try and you know, as a manager, I think you have to keep with them. You have to give them the opportunity and try and give them the platform to play. But look, Monaghan will definitely be looking for more from him.
I've just my phone's ringing in my pocket, and it's a number from Somalia. So it looks like I've just won a million euros.
I'll do next week's shoe.
Classic. Right, Paul Cribben, lad, scores 1-5. We didn't get to see this game because obviously we saw limited highlights, so I don't think the highlights did Paul Cribben justice. 1-5 from play against Kerry, obviously marking Killian Young, who just for my isn't at the top level of Kerry footballers, and if you're going to move on, you probably won't have him centre half back. But Cribben, we can't comment on his performance yesterday, but he is a top class player, and finally found his position that he's going to be best in, and that's centre half forward.
Yeah, look, he was good. I watched about 45 minutes of that Kerry Kildare game, and Cribben,
oh, you were seeing, yeah, saw that. Sorry,
Cribben,
I forgot
Cribben,
that.
Cribben was very prominent in the first half, you know, coming on the loop and kicking scores, and Kildare were brilliant really in terms of their efficiency up front early in the game against Kerry, and had Kerry in massive trouble. Cribben was good. At times he takes shots on that he shouldn't, you know, he kind of forced forces it when he's maybe under a bit of pressure. But I suppose that's maybe his role in the team, is to try and get on the end of these moves and shoot from distance. So when he's on form, and he's on form a hell of a lot, he probably maybe gets, you know, maybe six, seven shots a game, probably gets 4 out of 6, 5 out of 7, that sort of ratio. So there are times when his teammates can become, you know, it's fairly obvious that they're a little bit frustrated with him. He's a bit of a shot merchant. But you know, when he's putting scores over the bar, it's very, very difficult to be critical of him. And I think he's had a decent championship campaign. We're probably more prominent than the Super 8s, actually, when games have gotten tight and their inside forward line maybe are struggling to get the opportunities. He's the man that's coming on the loop and getting those scores. So
yeah,
look, he deserves credit for a good championship campaign.
On paper, Kildare have 0 points, the same as Roscommon, but the Super 8s have told a completely different story in that Kildare aren't far away and Roscommon are very far away.
Yeah, what was it, a point to Monaghan, 2 points maybe, and then
2 to Monaghan in Croker. Yeah,
well, look, interesting, like that Kerry Kildare would have won that game yesterday if Neil Flynn hadn't got himself sent off before,
and if they
half-time
had something to play for to really,
but
give
like there were 6 points up and he gets himself stupidly sent off.
Was there no win there? No, was it, like,
not enough of a factor to me, right? Like, I mean, it was Kildare, actually. It's one of these games that Kerry will try and use it maybe as a platform to build into next season, and Kildare would be looking at it going, these are the things we need to work on. But it's amazing how something like that can just transform them. Like, Kildare, it was like, to me, Kildare had gone down there with a really good attitude, you know, really looked like they were out there to win the game. Things were going well, they were up, they were winning 112-1-6, and it's as if they kind of run away with themselves a little bit and thought, we're here now, we're going to make even more of a statement. And Neil Flynn upends Killian Young along the sideline, and then just stupid, one of these things where the free is given and he's on the ground and Neil Flynn comes in with a big slap, you know, at the ball, but catches him in the head, straight red card, completely needless. 6 points up, cruising in the game. Now you're a man down, and Neil Flynn had scored 1-3, you know, he was taking the Kerry full back line to the cleaners a bit. You know, start of the second half, then Donlan in the Kildare goals goes walkabout, loses possession, and it's in the net. And all of a sudden, you know, at that point then, Kildare are still ahead, but they're down to 14 men. You
and
know,
Kerry have
the run on them, and, you know, then all of a sudden the game becomes a procession. You know, it's a game that, you know, I know it doesn't mean anything in the overall context of the championship, but for both of those teams, sometimes those games can be the one. Like, that could have been a game where Kildare really, you know, got something from their season, are able to go into next season. We beat Kerry down in Killarney. Yeah. You know, sometimes those things can make a difference.
It's just the same thing with Kildare, though, and they don't want to fall into this.
Why did they knock it over the line?
Well,
like,
exactly.
I mean, that's the thing.
They have Daniel Flynn getting sent off against Galway, a game at home they could have won. Now, they obviously got over the line against Mayo, which was a huge win. But then you have in the league, like, I mean, they lost by a point against Tyrone and Monaghan at home in the league, a point or two. There was nothing in it anyways. Then they lost against Donegal. Their captain Owen Doyle gets sent off for gumshoes. Why is it constantly a hard luck story of lads getting sent off? And what's the symptom of this? Why is this happening?
Correct, yeah.
Because they're not far away. Funny, and like, I mean, the under-20s had a great win. There's a Highland lag coming off
won
that.
Won the All-Ireland, yeah.
Won the All-Ireland. Kildare are a serious threat to the big counties, as far as I'm concerned, because they have that size, they have that physicality. What they probably need is a bollocks or two in the defence, a Philly McMahon, somebody just psychologically to go, we're here, which, you know, I think, but
even when they do it, it's, well, look,
I didn't call Philly a bollocks, but I just want to distance myself
from
McDonald's
that. Stephen McDonald's here,
right? Well, I think the Dubs have gotten away with a few as well over recent years.
A bollocks in the nicest possible way on the field. And like, Johnny Cooper, you understand the type of defender I think they need.
But this is the thing, like, I think it was Highland that got himself black carded for Clifford in the first half as well, where Clifford was, you know, he was tight enough on Clifford, but Clifford, you know, got a score too off him, and after Clifford get a score, he'd be in his face, and then, you know, Highland just grabbed him by the back of the jersey and just pulled him to the ground, gets himself a black card. Like, this is mad stuff. Like, you're winning by 6 points. Like, it's just, that's the sort of lack of discipline, really, that's kind of cost them. And it definitely cost them yesterday, but over the course of their season, be that a lack of discipline in terms of getting sent off, a lack of discipline maybe in tracking a runner or making a right decision in a game, all of these things have caught up with Kildare over the course of the season. It's why they got relegated, and it's why they didn't qualify out of the Super 8s as well, because they've just come up short. So they're very close, and they're one of the teams there that you're looking at going, they can take an awful lot from the season if they can you know, harness it in the right way, or they can continue to do the same things next season. So very interesting off season for them to see how they go into next season.
Yeah, definitely. But I'd be positive if I was them. Right, listen, we'll give performance of the weekend for what it's worth, even though your opinion means nothing on performance of the weekend. Who would you go for?
I'd go for Ryan McInnesby.
Ryan McInnesby, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say Ryan McInnesby as well, in terms of it was the biggest game and he had the biggest influence.
Clifford
yeah,
so won the public vote.
That's what I was going to ask you. So we did a vote on Sports Joe, and what was the story with this one?
I'd say nobody even watched the game. they just saw the paper and gave him. That's what we usually do in the league.
Paul Cribbin, 11%, Lee Brennan, 22%, Ryan McInnesby, 28%, and David Clifford, 40%.
So Ryan McInnesby came second. Look, I'm going to give it to Ryan McInnesby as well, like, even though it was a one-sided game, but it was one-sided because of the likes of his performance. He was outstanding, and like, I was close to giving it to Lee Brennan though, lads, but like, he made such a difference in such an important game. Like, I mean, I was Lee Brennan before the two of you said it, so you do influence me. I've gone right. I can't take it back off Ryan McInnesby, but Lee Brennan's very, very unlucky that he influenced a really tight game as much as he did and doesn't get performance the weekend. So listen, Ryan McInnesby wins it, so congratulations to him. I have a little bit of asthma today. No, do you hear me breathing now?
I just thought you were mad to get back to this phone call that you had.
Right, we'll be back on Thursday with some show. We've obviously nothing to preview next weekend, but we have semi-finals next weekend. It's the weekend after we come back.
Wouldn't forget right. The hurling semi-final.
Right, we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.